You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 5th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll be chatting with Chantal Marx, the cash build deal and the pick and pay trading update. Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress, on the resilience of the logistical property space. And then we'll be talking to the founder of My Social Life on the U.S. threat to close or force the sale of TikTok. Real risks from TikTok, or perhaps just trade war talk. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from CNBC. US and China set to review Phase 1 trade deal in mid-August. And Business Day, pick and pay bosses grilled over salaries. Morning markets, US was green overnight, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ up 0.4%. Asia is red this morning. We've got Sydney off 0.5% and Tokyo off 0.2%. Commodities, red everywhere except for gold, which is trading at $2,020 an ounce. Rand, 17.32, and top 40 opening call, looking for a green open, about 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Chantal Marx. She's head of research at FMB Wealth and Investment. Chantal, morning. Thank you for your time. Cash Build, big announcement yesterday, looking to buy the building company. The building company, obviously, it's a conglomerate of stores held by Pepco. Price going to be probably about $1.1 billion. On paper, it looks like a fairly good deal for Cashbuild. Gets them some nice footprint and almost doubles their revenue. What do you take of the deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's always very difficult to say when these companies make these transformative type deals, because they do tend to be a hit or a miss. But certainly on paper, as you said, it looks quite good. They're going to almost double their revenue. Cashbuild also has the advantage of being more or less ungeared. Mm. And they'll be able to take on this debt, and it'll probably be quite a comfortable debt level for them, even if it sounds quite high. The nice thing about Cashbuild as well is that even though the trading might be up and down, and it never really seems like they're shooting out the lights, they do generate quite decent cash flow. So from that perspective, I think it does make sense for them. And we had a quick look at the deal multiples, and if you look at the EV multiple, it's about six times, more or less, between five and six times, which is in line with Cashbuild's EV, or enterprise value. So what that tells you is that it neither looks expensive nor cheap, but it'll end up being a timing story. We'll have to see what time teaches us about this one.
Yeah, and as you point out, the Cashbuild balance sheet, no debt, $1.4 billion in cash. They could literally write a check for it. However, that's a lot of zeros, so instead they're taking some debt. The challenge here, always with deals, always with big deals, is it's going to be around the execution. It's getting those synergies, cutting those costs, and making it work. And that often is a little more challenge than one thinks.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we have seen some of these transformative deals go horribly wrong over the last few years. I'm thinking specifically about Woolworths and David Jones. I'm thinking about famous brands and the Great Burger Kitchen that ended up not being great at all. But I think probably the positive on this is that it is in South Africa. It is in an area that they understand and know quite well.
Good point.
So even though there are a couple of differences in terms of it being a little bit more specialized and wholesale focused than their traditional business, I think it's probably a better fit.
Yeah, they're not rushing off to some unknown territory and trying to conquer new worlds. Pick and pay update. I truthfully, I feel a bit for Pick and Pay. Sort of ShopRite came out with what I thought was a really good update, but of course ShopRite was for a full year, so only sort of 3 months of lockdown. Pick and Pay came for an update, and it was just a lockdown update. And it was a horror update, but I mean, I don't know, surely the market punished the stock. I was surprised by that. I mean, I thought we were expecting these level of updates from lockdown.
Yeah, I think that the market was probably a little bit unfair towards Pick and Pay. I mean, March to August, I cannot think of a worse period to report retail sales on. And along with that, they also had higher safety costs that they had to push through. They also paid bonuses to their staff, which I think is pretty great during this period. And then they also have a voluntary severance package that they've or program that they've been running for a couple of years now, where they are going to make quite a few payments during this specific period. The first half of their 2021 financial year ending in February next year. But they are going to get the benefits of that probably coming through in the second half. So I think Pick and Pay is probably going to see a much better second half. And just to be fair, I mean, we don't have any sort of revenue numbers in yet. So we don't know what sales look like. Sales could have been quite decent. It's just there's a lot of stuff in here that could have contributed to a pretty weak earnings per share number or headline earnings per share number for the last 6 months.
Yeah, a lot of one-offs. And as you say, March to August, about the worst time in the history of time to have been a retailer. Quick last question. Gold, $2,020. We know it's a crowded trade because I'm in the gold trade, which proves how crowded it is. Your take on gold? I mean, it is right now crowded, but it is fundamentally the place to be. Gold is doing what it should be doing. Times of uncertainty, it's moving higher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, typically you would want to start investing in gold when things cannot get any better and you cannot possibly see what can go wrong with the world. So that's when you want to invest in gold, because it will protect you and your portfolio when the world inevitably does become a worse place for a certain amount of time. The world does tend to get better, by the way, over a very long period of time. But with gold specifically at the moment, I think it's not actually as crowded as one might expect, because gold is still under-owned in investor portfolios. So that trade can get even more crowded. I know there's a couple of big institutions that are bandying the $3,000 an ounce number about. I think that I'll be a little bit more circumspect around that. But certainly, I mean, given the uncertainty, it still probably could stay at these levels for quite some time.
And I love that. Gold can still get even more crowded. Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting to Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress. Stephen, appreciate your time this morning. I mean, talking logistics, real estate as sort of a part of real estate. Typically, we've had industrial, which I suppose fits in. Of course, there's residential, not much in South Africa. Mostly, it's going to be retail. It's going to be office. But that logistic real estate, it's been really resilient part of property during this pandemic. But even beforehand, I mean, it is perhaps the big growth space within property as an investment class.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning, Simon. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, we've seen the likes of, you know, the US giant Prologis really sort of starting to define it as a different asset class within real estate. And then, you know, us at Fortress many years ago started to develop a lot of warehouses and logistics parks. And I think that was pretty the big e-commerce boom. But what we have seen is that a lot of the retailers are trying to refine their supply chains, and I think that trend is really also starting to drive a lot more of the logistics real estate development in the country.
Yeah, you make a great point. I mean, we always think around the e-commerce, the online, but it's more than that. It's just-in-time supply chains. And whilst supply chains have been, you know, massively disrupted during a pandemic, in truth, this perhaps plays into it, because you want your end point of your supply chain to be closer to home. You don't want to be just-in-time ordering from another continent. You want to be just-in-time ordering from down the road. And these sort of spaces, the logistics is absolutely geared for that. Get the right product at the right moment to the right place.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, one of the immediate drivers, I mean, I understand that there's been a lot of hype around e-commerce during the pandemic, but one of the first phone calls we got was from guys looking for overflow space. They didn't want to for example, turn the glass furnaces off so they needed space to pour the glass and all of the other products. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, the just-in-time supply chain perfected by the likes of Toyota and things like that, I think has been shown to be quite prone to disruption. So I think the companies are going to sit on a lot more stuff which requires the warehousing. And then, you know, overlaid with that is a big push by a lot of the retailers to make sure the e-commerce and omni-channel is actually working and sufficiently resourced.
Yeah, that's a great point. With, you know, the pandemic's taught us perhaps your just-in-time needs a little more stock sort of close to hand. Are we as a country, as an investment portfolio, have we been lagging perhaps in the logistics REIT space compared to our global peers? I mean, I look at the US, I look at Europe, there seems to be certainly in an investable sense a lot more available.
Yeah, we definitely have been lagging. I think our e-commerce penetration has been much lower. And I mean, my forecast is it's always going to be low. I think, you know, the West and Western Europe, the UK in particular, have got these very wealthy and very, very dense populations, which make the deliveries far more profitable, far more efficient. We don't have that in South Africa, and I can't see that densification coming as we see in the West. So I think it will always be lower, but we certainly are far behind, and we've always had, you know, great retail space and lots of retail space. I think some would say perhaps too much bad retail space.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the retailers have been pushing bricks and mortar stores and have now realized that, you know, with the likes of Takealot and what we've seen globally with Amazon, I think that the local retailers are probably going to take the lead in terms of driving a lot more omni-channel type of experience for their customers. And I think that's going to require a lot more warehousing and a lot more efficient logistics.
And this is one space. I mean, if we turn to Fortress, I mean, Fortress already has a fair bit of logistics space, but it is an area that you are actively looking to grow and to get to sort of almost a third of your asset base.
Yeah, we are, Simon. I mean, we've got, you know, at the moment a standing portfolio of just over $10 billion. With $3 billion sort of land banked and about $1 billion under development. So we've got seven active sites, and the warehouses are about, you know, 20 to 30,000 square meters, and we've got seven of those. I mean, just to give you a comparable, you know, a shopping center in Johannesburg, Hyde Park Shopping Center is probably 35,000 square meters. So, you know, that's quite a lot of lettable area that we're developing at the moment, and touchwood, we're still getting a lot of interest, even though I think we'll all admit the macroeconomics are a little bit weak at the moment. We still have a lot of interest. Our logistics portfolio vacancies in the low single digits and doing well. You know, when we came out with results on operations in April, our rental collection for the retail portfolio that we've got, which is still in quite a defensive sector in rural retail, was really just essential services, were sitting at about 56, whereas our logistics collections were at about 80, and we only had to write off just under 2% in April. So I think it has proved that it is resilient, and you know we've got a pipeline of a million square meters of lettable area that we're still planning to roll out over the next 3 to 5 years.
We'll leave that there, but you did mention rural retail and how that's defensive. I think we're going to have to get you back to chat and delve into that. Stephen Brown, CEO at Fortress, appreciate your time this morning, sir. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Dean McCubry. He's a founder of My Social Life. Dean, appreciate your time this morning. Chatting TikTok, it's been all over the news, in part because of all the TikTok stars and how they make those crazy videos that go viral. But the big issue's been the other side of the coin, which is around privacy and the data it collects and, you know, it has access to your clipboard and all of this. My sense, I mean, are we making perhaps a bit of a mountain out of a molehill? I'm not saying that TikTok isn't taking our data. I'm saying that probably most of the apps on my phone are taking a significant larger amount of data about me than, frankly, most of us are aware.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, what we do is we teach in schools and teach children about privacy and cybersecurity threats. And the easiest way to explain it is essentially that is the things that we do online and the information that we put out online are seen as data points. And then they create data bundles. They create data profiles of who we are. And from the base of those profiles, it means that we can then be targeted. Now, that can be anything from propaganda to buying a pair of shoes. The interesting thing about the difference with this, I think, there's a number of different reasons why this has really irked the U.S. But I think this is possibly the first time that this company, ByteDance, has really pierced kind of American attention. You know, they've had Alibaba and Baidu and they've got Tencent, and they may make a lot of money, but has it ever gripped Americans the way any of those apps have? That's what TikTok has done. And so it means that there is going to be an explosion of users, and that means a lot more data, which could be in the hands of the Chinese. So yes, you're right. These American companies are accessing our data. But that's okay because they're American. That's how Donald sees it, you see. But it's not so okay if it's in the hand of what they deem to be, or what they're calling, a surveillance state, which is China.
Yeah, and that concern is, as you say, I mean, it, everyone's got it. The worry is it ends up in the hands of the Chinese government. In defense of ByteDance, there's no indication that the Chinese government does have access. I suppose it's the same with Huawei, in a sense. You know, there's fears. There's no evidence yet that the government is doing anything. But this has seen President Trump, he's come down, he's on the weekend actually, he said he was going to ban TikTok in the US. The kids, I think, will get around that in about 2 minutes flat. Now he said it needs to be sold by 15 September. Microsoft is interested. Is this, I mean, you know, is this perhaps just more sort of an extension of trade wars and the tensions between China and the US? And remembering, of course, you know, Facebook and Twitter, for example, are both banned in China.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely would be an extension, or is an extension of trade wars. If you look at what happened, say, in India, the banning of it in India, which had about roughly 120 million users, which it lost on June the 30th, that was partially in a way that there was some jostling there about a dispute in which some Indian soldiers were killed, I think it was about 20, on the border of the Himalayas. And India can't really tackle China. They're both these very powerful countries, but they can from an internet point of view. And in one sense, there's a mirroring there. So India was like, right, well, I'll stick it back to you this way, the way in which we can. And at the same time, because they banned 59 other Chinese apps at the same time. But what they were essentially also doing was bringing that digital advertising, which is set in India to grow by 26% this year, bringing it back into the country. So, it's almost like hitting somebody with a little bit of a commercial stick, but potentially also making it claims around the surveillance state, which could also be true. The difference with Huawei, though, is that it's more infrastructure-based. There's a slight difference between, you know, the level of spying between internal infrastructure and actually data packaging, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And I hadn't even thought around the ad income and how that plays. And that, you know, just shows the complexities of it. In your sense, I mean, you know, a sale to Microsoft and you know, ByteDance has offered to relocate a head office to the US. They've offered to share their algorithms, which, you know, is their secret sauce, which no one else is doing. Google's not going to show us their algos. Does this solve the problem in terms of sort of, you know, at the level of government sort of posturing with each other?
I don't think so, because I think that the posturing, you know, if one looks at kind of the feisty bombasticness of Donald Trump, is I think that that target was simply moved. And the reason why is because China has made no secret that essentially they want to be the leader in AI by 2030. Mm-hmm. And so that means that you know, just, and this is what we see in the world that we teach inside schools, is that if Fortnite goes down, then another one comes up. You know, if you have PUBG, PUBG becomes Fortnite becomes Brawl Stars, and then so on and so on. So I think that the posturing will always continue because they will always feel threatened. And this is what's really interesting, is the threats continue to perpetuate by the nature of the algorithm. So what I mean is, if the country feels threatened, its residents or its inhabitants inside the country are always reading about China being a terrible threat, and China is always looking at America being this kind of big arrogant bully, and that's what we're reading. The algorithm serves us more of that. It's very divisive, and this is what's really, really tricky, is I don't deem it to be able to go away. I've done a huge amount of reading on what's happened in India and China and these different aspects. And if you know this world, you realize just how quickly it evolves. It only took these guys 200 days to put together TikTok originally when it was called Douyin.
Yeah.
You know, you can build these incredible, you know, ByteDance is a super powerful organization, and they now know what they're doing. So, you know, this is really the first time that the app has really pierced American consciousness and is now sitting up there, you know, like Google, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, and so on, you know, certainly in terms of popularity and potential. And I think we're going to see a lot more.
Yeah, and your point, there'll be another one. You know, it's whack-a-mole. We can solve this problem. There'll be another problem coming sometime soon. That's Dean McCubbrey. He's founder My Social Life. Thank you for your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. at MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app, podcast from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social media, hashtag MoneyWeb. Now, this show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for your time listening this morning and for my guests' contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.